Shaped by Sound combines performance and conversation to capture the depth of the North Carolina music scene.
As a young boy in Charlotte, North Carolina, Reuben Vincent dreamed that one day he would be a rapper. That dream became a reality when he was discovered by legendary hip-hop producer Ninth Wonder at the age of 13, and he hasn't looked back since. Today on the Shaped by Sound podcast, Charlotte-based rapper and producer Reuben Vincent. Reuben Vincent from Charlotte, North Carolina, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Man.
Charlotte, born and raised.
I am so pumped to have you on this show.
Likewise, thank you.
Thank you for being here, man. If we could, I'd like to start out with Charlotte. So you were born and raised in Charlotte, is that
right? Yes, born and raised in Charlotte, on the east side of Charlotte, to be exact. I was born, I do not remember the hospital, I wish I did.
I think that's okay.
I was born in East Charlotte, North Carolina, born and raised there until I moved to South Charlotte, like when I was 16. But yeah, mm-hmm. Charlotte overall.
Yeah. What was it like growing up there for you?
I feel like I had a pretty cool childhood. You know what I'm saying? I feel like, you know, I have, you know, we all as teenagers, kids, we have the experiences of growth, you know, whether it's on like the side of like, hey, everything is fun. But then you also had the things that every teenager goes through, which is like anxiety, peer pressure, all the extras, which, you know, I feel like I had a pretty common childhood, but also unique in a way of like, I grew up in a African home, specifically my mother. I lived with my mother my whole life. My father, he lived like 15 minutes down the road from me, majority of my life. So like, you know, I seen him on and off, you know what I mean? Like, you know, sometimes I'll go see him on the weekends, like, or there might be a year where like, I really don't see him on the weekends, but my parents were very much there, you know what I mean? And you know, I'm the only child from my mother and father before they, you know, got married afterwards. Mm-hmm. So I was the oldest. I'm the oldest son from my dad, but I'm my oldest mom's child, period. So, you know, being the older brother, you know, you're getting pushed out there first. You're getting the first experience of everything.
Right.
From school to like how to interact with people, how, you know, especially my mom didn't grow up in America. Mm-hmm. Well, she grew up in Liberia and then moved to Maryland when she was 16.
Okay.
And then my father he grew up in West Africa, period.
Yeah.
So I'm first generation.
Right.
You know what I mean? So just being a first generation African American, growing up in the South, Charlotte, where it's a lot of, you know, culture, I can say, and growing culture. I feel like, you know, Charlotte has grown so much from when I was a child. Mm. But like the vivid memories I remember of like being a kid is like my dad used to pick me up in his Cadillac Northstar V8 2004 and used to play like Tupac and like Biggie and like, you know, Nas and 50 Cent and all them things. And then, you know, I go to my mom, and my mom wasn't necessarily like the biggest on rap, but she was big on like, you know, just evolution of her children doing better than her.
Yeah.
And the growth of that, you know, so I think I had a good balance where like my dad, I got all like my hip hop sauce and like swag from like my dad and like his like charismatic traits and like goofiness. But my mom has like always been very grounded, and like a very much a disciplinarian.
Okay.
So like, you know, she was big on discipline and like, you know, keeping us grounded and like being mindful of what we ate and, you know, being like, you know, making sure like she made sure I read books and like she was like always big on like, you know, having good handwriting and like having good diction and spelling and all of that stuff. So I had like a balance to that. And then going out into school and learning and picking up my own traits from kids my age. So.
Right. So it seems like you had like a really great mix of culture.
Yeah.
What was that like for you, you know, being a first generation American and having these different influences?
I think for a long time, I think it was a little bit of a split in identity because you're a first generation child. You know, you go out to school and you go into the world thinking that you're just like every other kid that's living in America.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, even from people who share the same skin as me, but the parents that might have their ancestors might have been far removed from Africa, they're looking at you a little bit different because your mom just now moved here, you know, right, what I'm saying, and dad. So I had a weird dynamic of like, yo, it's weird because it's like, yo, I'm African-American for real. And I think, you know, the set kind of shows that, mm-hmm, of like the duality, because it's like, I go home, I go to school and I'm thinking I'm just like y'all, but then y'all like, no, you're African, you know what I'm saying? And it's like your mom acts a different way, or y'all eat different foods. So it was like a split in culture. But then it's like, I grew up a hip hop kid. I grew up a kid who loves sneakers. I grew up a kid who loves basketball. I grew up a kid who loves the same things you guys like, you know what I'm saying? And I live here. I was born here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then you go there and people are like, you know, telling you you're a little bit different. So it was like a little bit of a split in identity. But, you know, as I've gotten older, I've been, you know, more secure in who I am just overall. And I don't think no human is one dimensional.
Yeah.
So, you know, all these dimensions make me Reuben Vincent.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was going to ask you about that. Like, does that sort of mix of things, like, how does that influence you with your music?
Yeah, I think that's a big priority now for me. In my music is to showcase that duality, showcase who I am as a person. Because I feel like one thing that I was trying to learn in this game, or like in this, you know, industries when I first got in, is like, who are you? You know what I mean? I feel like that's the big question that people either ask directly or indirectly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, at one point I was trying to figure that out. And, you know, I think another thing, I feel like, you know, a lot of times you're like, man, maybe my life is like boring. You know what I'm saying? Or like,
I think that all the time.
Yeah. You know, it's like, who cares what, you know, I might have to say that's not as always extravagant. Like, I'm not sitting here like, yo, I'm in the streets, yo. You know what I'm saying? Or I'm not. And nothing's wrong with that. You know, if that was what your experiences was, or like, oh, I did this or did this. But I think my experience was unique when I started to realize that, like, when I started to put out songs that, like, necessarily was tailored to who I was as a person, mm-hmm, and I had people coming up like, yo, I grew up just like that. Mm. So it's like, your life isn't boring. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's somebody who relates to your story.
Yeah.
It's just about how you convey it. So I think, you know, me just being more comfortable in that has allowed the music to, like, just be more, sound like me. You know, mm-hmm, what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to backtrack just a little bit and kind of go back to, when did you fall in love with music? You were kind of talking about your dad earlier.
I feel like I fell in love with music early, like as far as I can remember. Like, I feel like there's like a picture of me like 2 years old and I'm like holding a microphone and like it was like attached to a boombox, but like I was holding it like a rapper. Like, yeah. I was like, so it's just funny because it's hard for me to like be like, yo, this is the pinpoint of where like it started for me, because I feel like it's always been there and I've always been like so in love with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
From like as far as my early memory, like one of my early, I think I was having a conversation with somebody in the car the other day and I was telling them that, you know, like they was like, yo, you be dancing for, like, you don't dance a lot, but you like, you actually know how to dance. And I was like, yo, it's funny because like one of my first core memories in life is like, I was like at the park, and that's another thing. Like with the African community, the Liberian community, like they throw parties. They throw cookouts, big cookouts, whether it's like Liberian Independence Day, whether it's somebody's graduation or whatever. You know what I mean? And they used to throw cookouts in the park, and it was in Sugar Creek Park because I used, mm-hmm, to stay off Sugar Creek. And I remember being 3 years old, 3 or 4 years old, but my very first memory, like one of my very first memories, is they was playing music and I was just dancing. And I was just like rocking, and like there was like this older girl, and it was like we was all surrounded in a circle with people, and I was just dancing, like doing this and stuff. But I say that to say, like, I think music has always been embedded in my brain. And like my very first few memories is like my dad picking me up and playing like hip hop, and like me being like, who is this? Or like, mm-hmm, even being so infatuated with hip hop that I was scared of it. Like, I was scared of Tupac's voice.
Really?
Like, I thought his voice was like super strong. You know what I mean? Or like, So like when my dad would play him, like it kind of scared me. But at the same time, it's like, I forgot the saying, but you know how some things like people are scared of, like they're also infatuated with?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Right.
Like, that's what that was for me.
You know what I mean? Making you react, right? And
yeah.
That's what you're attracted to.
Yeah. And I didn't know that. It just was like, because I was so young, it was like, why am I so reactive to this? Mm-hmm. And maybe like now that I'm older, it wasn't fear.
Yeah.
It was just more like, what is this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think, you know, those are like my very first memories, but I cannot recall like a day where it was like, yo, this is the day.
Yeah.
But I can recall my first rap.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
What was the first rap?
So this is going to be a funny story. So I was in preschool and there was this girl named Michaela. And I don't know why I'm in preschool having a crush on a girl at the time. I need to be focused on squares and learning my letters and stuff like that. But anyways, there was a girl named Michaela in the school, in the class. And there was another boy in there that I ironically like ended up growing up with more and more. His name was Shamar.
Mm-hmm.
He actually passed away though. Rest in peace.
Mm.
Shamar, for some reason, like, I saw Shamar and her was, like, playing on the playground together. And, like, I wrote, like, a diss track at my, like, at home, like, dissing, like, her and dissing him and the whole situation and stuff like that. I don't know what I was thinking, but it was funny because my mom had a babysitter for me at the time because she used to work. And the babysitter was like, okay, write out your spelling words.
So, uh-huh.
And I was like, okay. And I was writing them out and I was getting bored and she fell asleep. She took a nap.
Yeah.
And instead of me being like a bad kid and like messing up the house, I sat there and wrote a rap. And that was my rap. It was like a diss track to like Michaela and Shamar.
Wow. Wait, well, did it work?
I never showed them.
Oh,
I,
no.
Yeah, I never showed them. I think I wrote it and then I was like, I'm over it now. You know what I mean? Which is kind of crazy now that I'm a little bit older because like that was like my first sign of release of like, you know, that's how you do with journaling. That's how you do it. Like, so it's like music has became a place where like, if I'm frustrated about something, if I'm feeling a certain way about something, even if like a lot of times I try to do better now with addressing it in person, but at a time where like, if I didn't want to address it, I would address it in song and then just let it go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which I think is like a dope tool that I was even like thinking like that at 4 years old. You know
right. You're finding catharsis.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which is incredibly advanced.
Yeah. I'm like super shocked now that I think back about it, but I've always been like into writing, like even in preschool, like the first thing that like even before I went to kindergarten, when I was in preschool, my teacher told my mom one time because I like wrote a story. Like they used to do this thing where like every weekend they'll take let a student take a teddy bear home and like treat it like it's a person. And like you have to tell the story about what you and the teddy bear did and all of that stuff. So like I wrote this real like concise story of like what me and the teddy bear did. And like, I told him we tried rice and African gravy together and all this stuff. But the way I wrote it, she was like his storytelling is really good.
Mm.
That's what she told my mother. So, you know, now that I'm like thinking about all of these early moments, those are things that like was like very like prominent early on.
Yeah. Well, it's, I feel like it's really consistent with your story though. Right.
Yeah.
Because it seems as a 4 year old, you were sort of workshopping your early hip hop and then, but that seems to continue, right?
I mean,
So how did you kind of take that early stages of writing and sort of develop even as a young person?
I think as time went on, I just continued to like write, whether it was like, sometimes I'll draw album covers.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was a big thing I did from like kindergarten to like second grade of like, I'll draw album covers and then I'll write like I'll do like a back track list and I'll be like, oh, featuring 50 Cent and like, yo, it's funny, even before like I wrote that real concise rap, I have a notebook still from when I was like 3 years old where I was like writing, the words didn't make sense.
Yeah.
But like I was writing raps like Bow Wow, or like I was a big Bow Wow fan. So like one of my raps, I was like Bow Wow Wow, I'm a dog, pow pow. Wow. Like it was just random words that rhymed, but they were like, I was three. You know what I'm saying? I didn't know what I was doing. I say that to say, as I got older, I was starting to write in my room a lot. That's like how I like, that was like my release form. You know what I mean? Like, you know, a lot of kids were like playing with toys and like Pokemon cards. And I was too. Like I had an Xbox and stuff like that. But like more so I was listening to music on my Xbox.
Yeah.
And like writing raps and stuff. And then I remember I used to go with my Uncle DeBon to his soccer games because he used to play soccer.
Mm.
And one day they like had to drive like an hour out. It was so far. But he was playing Lil Wayne in the car. And Lil Wayne just dropped Dedication 3 or 2.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just remember they were like, yo, Lil Wayne, y'all hear? Like, he's rapping. He's... And then they was like, he can freestyle. And I was like, I can freestyle too. And so they was like, show us. So then they played one of the beats. They played Cannon, which was on Dedication 2. So it was Dedication 2, actually. And I just remember I started freestyling and I wasn't making sense really, but they was like, yo, there's words there and there's like flow there.
Yeah.
So, you know, he took me, there was this lady who used to cut my hair off Central on the east side of Charlotte named Nia. And he took me to her house and he was like, yo, like my nephew can rap. Hmm. And she was like, well, let me see. And she played Biggie Juicy.
Oh,
the instrumental. And I just rapped for her in the, like her living room. And she was like, well, he actually, yes, he can rap. And she was like, well, I have a guy who has a studio in his house that he can go to tomorrow. So like that night, that's like another early moment of me writing. That night, I think I wrote like 4 songs.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was actually, I was with another dude kid named Mateo, who's actually an audio engineer now. But Mateo was trying to rap as well. He was like a kid as well. But I remember like, I was so like, and this is also an early moment of leadership for me, where now that like, it's so funny we're talking about it because now all of it's like playing back in my head. Like, oh, this was a moment of leadership. This was a moment of, like you said, catharsis, yeah, of like finding that. I think, you know, I was like, yo, you have to come spend the night at my house because we got to write these raps because we're going to the studio tomorrow. So like, he like, I sat there and like stayed up all night writing these raps. I didn't have no beat. Mm. So it's like, I'm just writing raps with like in my head of like what I think is going to be the beats. So we get there and none of the beats he played could match with my raps. So I was just like, I got to kind of scrape these. And Mateo got nervous. Mm. And I was like, no, this is my moment. We're going to take this. So we get in the booth. He gives us both 2 headphones. And I'm like, bro, let's just rap. Like, let's just figure it out.
Yeah.
And Mateo's like, nah. And he like backed up. And then I was like, all right. I was like, press record. And I just rapped for like 3 minutes straight. Mm. And they were like highly impressed. And, you know, that's when they taught. That's when I was taught how to write a 16 because I was just rapping straight through.
Right.
And they was like, yo, you got to like learn how to do a hook. Mm-hmm. You got to learn how to like write a 16.
Yep.
You got to know what a bridge, a chorus is, all these things. And, you know, that catapulted me into like going back home and like writing my own stuff. And I started to continue to write until, you know, being 13 years old and me and Ninth Wonder.
Yeah, that's incredible. And so, wait, so how old were you in that moment where you were in the booth?
8 years old.
Gosh, so as an 8-year-old, you're like, this is my moment, and just launched into it.
Yeah. 100%.
And then you haven't turned back since?
No, never turned back ever. I mean, there's been moments of like, oh man, like, you know, maybe I shouldn't rap. I'm a kid, you know what I mean? But then I'm like, my mom's like, you know, at first my mom didn't understand, you know, when people used to tell her like, oh, your kid can rap. She just like, all right, like whatever. You know what I mean? My mom's an African mother. Like, you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, but one day my uncle came to the house and he was like, no, like he can really rap.
Mm.
And he played the song that I did at the studio. And she was just like, oh, wow. You know what I mean?
So she caught on and started believing.
Yeah. You know, and then that's when she started to support. And, you know, without her support, without my father's support as well, because he was supporting as well. Everybody around me, I think your environment plays a part. I probably would have like stopped, you know what I mean, at one point, you know. But even when I was like 11 and I was like, I'm a kid, mom. Like, you know, I started to like be like, let me be like realistic. Like, I'm a kid. I'm in Charlotte. Nobody's really here like to like. Like, and I still have a lot to experience.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm gonna just be a kid and go to school and like maybe go like play basketball or something at the time.
Yeah.
And she was like, Ruben, you have a gift. Like, don't run away from that.
Mm.
You know, I remember that day vividly. Was in the car, was going back home. She was like, do you still want to rap? And I was like, no, I don't think so. And I was like, I'm a kid. Like, nobody's really trying to pay it. And I felt like, you know, you have kid rappers, like, you know, Bow Wow was one. These other artists were one. But I wanted to be taken serious like a grown man.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even at 8 years old, I didn't want people to be like, oh, he's a kid rapper. That's so cute.
Right.
Like, I wanted them to be like, no, he's a rapper.
Right.
So I was like, I'm a kid. Nobody's going to take me serious. And she was like, nah, let's just continue. So, and then she bought me a microphone for Christmas and I ended up starting to record at home.
Man, that must have felt so good to have that buy-in from your mom.
For
like,
sure.
That trust, too,
for sure.
Right? That, like, you are talented.
Yeah.
Like, you can do this. This isn't just a dream.
For sure. And she, like, for years, she didn't get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She still was, like, in the back of her mind, like, I see how much he loves this, so I'm not going to get in the way.
Yeah.
But let's see how long this is going to be, like, a thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But instead of her, like, And that's one thing I'm grateful for. Instead of her worries or like her throwing out negative thoughts of like, I don't know if this is going to work. She's like, let me put my biases aside or my opinion aside and still pour into him. I'm going to buy him a mic. I remember one time she like took me to like this Disney audition. She was really? Like, yeah. And like my mom was like, we were far from like fortune. We didn't have no fortune or nothing. Like my mom was she worked 3 jobs at one point. But it was like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure my kids' dreams, you know, get.
Man, out. Your mom so, rocks.
Yeah, for sure.
Superhero mom.
Yeah, shout out to her.
Yeah. So as you're starting to kind of progress, like what happens then? Like, so you have this buy-in from your family and friends and a community that's really supporting you.
Yeah.
And then you start developing even more, right?
Yeah. So, it's so crazy. Like, it's all coming back to me, and it's coming back to me in a different way. Like, it's not like I forgot any of these things, but like, it's all coming back to me in a different way now. Being, 24 by the time this comes out.
Yeah.
Like, seeing it. And being like, oh, this was a moment. Like I said earlier, this was a leadership moment. This was like when my mom bought me the mic when I was in middle school or like fifth grade, I begged my mom for $20 to go buy burned CDs.
Mm.
And I recorded a whole mixtape, 17 songs.
Wow.
In my bedroom and burned the CDs and passed them out to kids at my school. You know what I'm saying? At first I was charging $5 and I was like, okay, kids don't have no money. So then I was like, I'm just about to give them to everybody so people can go listen to my music.
Yeah.
And just even listening, thinking back now, I'm like, whoa, to be like in sixth grade, like thinking like that was like, I have to like give myself credit for that. You know what I mean? But I say that to say, so then that happened. And then I started to like go on the internet and realize like, okay, this is the blog era of like mixtapes and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So like I'm seeing the rise of like the J. Cole's, the Drake's, the Kendrick Lamar's, the Kid Cudi's, the Wale's, and seeing like, okay, they're putting stuff on Datpiff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mac Miller, Wiz Khalifa, they're putting things on Datpiff.
Right.
I might not be their age. They're like older than me, but I'm going to try.
Yeah.
So, and I wish I still had them up, but I was like 12. 13, putting mixtapes up. And there is still one up that ended up getting me the recognition from Knife Wonder.
Whoa.
But I was putting mixtapes up, putting them on Datpiff, putting them on Hot New Hip Hop, putting them on SoundCloud, putting them on all these websites, just trying to see if I can build my fan base, putting music on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I remember it was like I was 3 mixtapes in. By this time, I'm in 7th grade. 13 years old at this time, I put out a mixtape called Idolescent, which was like a play on the word adolescent, but put an idol in the front. I put it out, and then this was another moment of me being like, man, I'm a kid, man. Nobody's going to take me serious. Like, let me just not. And I remember I put the mixtape out, and I was sending it to all of my favorite producers, my favorite, like, artists and stuff like that.
How are you sending it?
Looking for their emails.
Yeah.
Which now I realize maybe some of those emails were like fake and the internet made them up. Like, what's Pharrell's email? Like, why would Pharrell's email just be randomly up on
Yeah.
But anyways, I was sending out these emails and the last person I was going to send one to was Knife Wonder.
Mm.
But I did not, because I was like, he's never going to see it. All these people out and missing the emails, they're not replying. And then I was sending, like, I was making comments, yo, I'm a 13-year-old from Charlotte, NC, making real rap, check me out. Like, I was putting these comments under pages.
Yeah.
In my favorite mixtapes. No, I was getting no replies. So one day I went to school and I was like, I'ma just be a kid. Why am I so, like, ambitious? Like, you know, like, I was asking myself, like, why am I being so ambitious about this? Just be a kid, go to school. Maybe when you graduate, you know, it'll work itself out.
Yeah.
So, but before I did that, my cousin was like, you should make a Twitter, because that's how all these artists are starting to rise up.
Yeah.
So I made the Twitter, and then I gave up, quote unquote, and then, like, for 7 days, I wasn't on my social media. And then I went to school. I came back home, and then I logged in to Twitter, and I seen like 17 notifications. And I, mind you, I barely had any followers at the time. So I was like, why do I got 17 notifications? So I click on it, and then I scroll down, and it's like Knife Wonder has followed you. Rhapsody has followed you. But before that, it was a tweet of somebody from Oakland. His name is Milan Drake. He actually teaches at a school in California. I think it's USC, actually, if I'm not mistaken. He was like, I don't know this kid from anywhere, but I just randomly stumbled upon this mixtape at Knife Wonder, at Rhapsody. You guys should check him out. He's from North Carolina. I think you guys need to pick him up.
Wow.
And Knife just so happened to be on tour in Europe, bored in the room one day, and was like, let's listen to this. And he pressed play, and he was impressed to the point where he tweeted, yo, this kid is the truth. Mm. When he asked me, when you see this, shoot me a DM. So then I hit him. The first thing he was like, where's your mother? He's like, which is fair. You're not going to be talking to no kid and, you know, no 13-year-old on. So I ran to my mom. And my mom's still not, like, fully in tune with what's happening in hip-hop. She doesn't know who Knife Wonder was.
Right.
But I'm like, Knife Wonder just tweeted me, like, yo.
Yeah.
And she's like, who is that? So then I, like, put up his Wikipedia. And then she's like, well, reply. And then I'm like, he wants to talk to you. So then they start talking. He's like, yo, your kid is super talented. You know, I'm not trying to promise him anything, but I'd love for you guys to come up to the studio. Because, you know, I was recording. My mic was terrible at the time. My quality was trash. But he heard the potential. So, you know, he was like, yo, I'm in tour in Europe for these next couple months. When I get back in September, you guys drive up to Raleigh. I'll book you guys a hotel. You know what I'm saying? And I just want to see, like, record with him for a weekend.
Wow.
We drove up to Raleigh. First night, I think I recorded 2 songs, but by the end of that weekend, recorded 9 songs in 3 days.
Well, so can we take a step back for a little bit? I want everybody to understand, like, how big of a deal it is to be working with Knife Wonder.
Yeah, for sure.
Can you kind of give a little bit of backstory on Knife Wonder?
Yes, Knife Wonder is a pillar in hip hop in general, a legend, one of the greatest producers to ever do it in hip hop, but also a pillar to North Carolina's music. Grammy Award winning producer, started off in a group which was started in Durham, North Carolina, by the name of Little Brother, who did very much successful things. And then that catapulted his career, because right after the Little Brother album, he got a placement from Jay-Z, which then trickled into Destiny's Child.
Right.
Which then trickled into Mary J. Blige, which trickled into Erykah Badu, and then Kendrick Lamar. Even Drake, even Wale, you know, all of these names, Mac Miller,
right.
You know, all these people that ended up being a part of my generation that looked at him like a legend. But, you know, he still, you know, is a very advocate for Carolina, still lives here, you know, and he started a label called Jamla Records, mm-hmm. which is with the home previously to Rhapsody, you know, and me as well, you know what I mean? And, you know, he's very, very special in hip hop, and it's just very special in what North Carolina music is. So to get acknowledged from him by 13 is like very super alien. Like, it's a very alien story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, like, he wasn't even working with kids or working with anybody younger. Like, for him, like, I just feel like it's so divine for me to meet him at 13, and then him to be like the mentor or the person that's kind of helped me and ushered me into the game.
Right. And, I mean, you just said it, right? The talent list for him is just unbelievable. And all of a sudden, you're a part of that list. Yeah. What did that feel like?
Honestly, like, surreal. And it still kind of feels surreal now that, like, I think about it. Because it's not by coincidence, but it's, like, also, like, almost fairy tale how the story sounds. Mm-hmm. Like, even when sometimes I tell it in interviews, it's like, that really happened? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's like, I didn't have no connections to nobody in the industry. Knife wasn't my cousin or my uncle or not one of my uncles or aunts knew him, or nobody in my family dated him, or, you know, like some random, like, connection, right?
Yeah.
Like,
he just saw your talent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, in the thanks to the internet from somebody who never met me, still to this day has not met me.
Yeah.
But just so happened to stumble across my music on the internet. And Knife just so happened to be on Twitter and was like, the dude was like, I don't know this kid. That's how he started off. He was like, I don't know this kid, but I think you guys need to check him out.
Yeah.
Like, You know, so it's like a confirmation that what I'm doing, like little moments of like that, I feel like is like a wink from God.
Hmm.
Like you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Hmm. So you and your mom go up to Raleigh.
Yeah.
And you're in the booth and you're kind of in this moment again where you're seizing the moment.
Yeah.
What happens?
The first time he was like, well, do you have something? And I was like, yo, you know what's crazy? Actually, Tay, let's backtrack.
Yeah.
Knife was like, write 7 songs before you come down here.
Ooh.
But
he gave you homework.
Yes. Yeah. I lost my notebook right beforehand.
No.
Lost everything. I was so crushed. That drive there, I tried to write as many verses as I could, just like I did that first time when I first went to the studio.
Yeah.
Being prepared. So I get there and I'm like, he's like, you ready? I'm like, I guess. Like, I'm nervous because I just lost all my work.
And you're 13.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember the first verse I recorded, it was like, I'm out of this world with the flow that I whirl on the beat. All this trying to start beef, but it seemed more like beat. I'm different, so they copy, because my lines be hard to compete. So if you copy and pasting, then I'm pressing delete. As you see, rocking L.I.G. with J's on my feet. Dunking from the free throw line every time, spit a line from the sheet. That's unique, never spitting bars with fatigue. A lot of you artists must be jealous of the dude's technique. They can't take this away from me, just like Sinatra. For your ears, we marauders, breaking down beats like piñatas. This is evidence, ever since I designed my wings like Daedalus. Reading the Exodus, check my last name, I'm heaven sent. A style is not like the other rookies trying to touch the mic. You hear my extraterrestrial style, but yo's, it's all right. I'm one of the best MCs you heard in a while. Out of this world style, call me extraterrestrial. That's the first verse I ever recorded in front of Knife at 13 years old. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of crazy. But
it's crazy. Yeah. It's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so he was like very impressed. And then, you know, they just kept feeding me beats. Like, my mom went and stayed in the hotel, but I slept in the studio every night.
Mm.
I obviously went and go take a shower, but, you know, I ended up sleeping at the studio.
Yeah.
And then it ended up becoming like an ongoing habit for me.
Yeah.
This day.
So after that session, sort of what happens? Are you kind of going back and forth from Charlotte to Raleigh and recording?
Not necessarily as much. So right before we left, he talked to my mom and he was like, I don't want to promise your son anything. I just want to give him a place to record, you know. And then he was telling her, he was like, you know, can your son be a millionaire, make millions or make money out of this game? Or he was like, I'm not going to promise that he's going to be a millionaire, but can he make some money out of this game? 100%. And then that's when they called me to the back and he was like, now, I think you're very talented. Can you be as big as a Drake or Kendrick Lamar? I absolutely believe that.
Hmm.
Can you reach certain heights? I absolutely believe that. But you're still 13 years old. You know, I don't want, you know, to be, you know, trying to bring you into something too early while you have a lot of life to experience.
Right.
So go home, but think about this question. There's two options you can do with this resource. This can just be a source of release. And you can come down here and record whenever you want to record. Or B, you can want to do this for the rest of your life. And we can help you, you know, in that way. And he was like, think about it, though.
Mm.
I already knew what I wanted to do. I was like, B. Like, I wanted to be like, B, let's go, like, right now.
Right.
But, you know, I went home, thought about it. And I remember I sent him a text. And I was like, yo, I want to do this. Like, I really want to do this. And he was like, well, all right, you know, let's go. But I'm thinking that when I say I want to do this, he's going to be like, all right, let's go. Game action, let's go right now. But then it became being still and being patient, because I would blow up Knife's phone. And if I have, like, I'll show you after we get off here. Like, if I go to my old Twitter threads, like, you see just mad messages of me just texting them.
Yeah.
Like, blowing them up. Yo, what you think of this? Yo. Just asking him random questions just to get his attention. I started going up there, like, every 5 months, every 4 months, 5-6 months. Like, every other season, almost. Because he was busy. You know, he's working on Rhapsody. He's working on his other artists. And, you know, at the time, again, like, I'm still a kid. I still have to experience life. So it was like, yo, I hit him and I beg him, like, can I come up to the studio again? Can I come up again? Can I come up again? He's just like, hold off, hold off. Like, I'm busy running around.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have the time to, like, be sitting and paying fully attention to a 13-year-old.
Sure.
He has kids of his own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, as a kid, I'm like, man, like, do he not rock with me? Like, what's going on? And then he'll be like, yo, come up. So then that turned into me starting to be eager to do stuff on my own while I was playing the waiting game of getting back into Knife's, you know, presence. So 13, 14, 15. But every time I'm going up, I'm learning a little bit more. Okay, you're over-rapping the beat. Learn how to do breath control. Learn how to give yourself space in the song.
Mm-hmm.
Learn how to rap. Rhapsody taught me how to take out filler words. Okay, this is how you construct a hook. This is how you do this. This is how you do this. This is how, like, I'm learning all these things. Every time I'm coming up, even though it's 6 months apart, I'm learning something new.
Yeah.
Each time.
So you're going to the school of hip-hop.
Yeah, yeah, basically. And I wanted to graduate early. Like, you know, like, I realized later that, like, I had to go through the school, but I wanted to come in and just be like, graduation time, I'm here. I remember I was 15, and this is years of us, like, you know, I'm going up there. I might not hear from him for months. Then I'll go up again. I might not hear from him for months. Then I'm going to go up again. 15, I put up a video on my Instagram of me freestyling. And he was like, man. He was like, you sound real polished. You sound like you're starting to get it. And he was like, man, when can you come back up? And I was like, I can come back up spring break.
Right.
And he was like, okay, bet. And I was working this job at Chick-fil-A at the time. And I remember I asked him, I was like, yo, can I get spring break off? Because, like, I need to, like, go. This is, like, my opportunity. And this was around the same time. I was 16 at the time, matter of fact. And this is around the same time Kendrick Lamar's album came out, Damn.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, right before, it was like the week or two before. And I remember my job was like, no, you're like, you can't. So I remember, like, that night I was like washing dishes or like squeezing lemons for the lemonade or something.
Yeah.
I was probably squeezing lemons and I hated squeezing lemons because my hands used to hurt.
Sure.
He's had this little squeezer and he had to like take the lemonade. Like, and I'm just doing that for hours. But
I hope you quit that job.
Yeah, I left that night. I left. Yeah. I left. And around this time too, like from 13, when around the same time I met Knife, like my mom's house had went on foreclosure and her and her husband she was with had divorced. So we were going through like a tough time.
Gosh.
But I feel like at the same time that helped me be so hungry for, you know, what's going on, like to chase the like music.
And, yeah, that opportunity became such a, it became all the more important,
yeah.
Because you don't have a source of income anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, my mom's like, and then my mom is like working super hard. Like, this is where she started working 3 jobs and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm just seeing her like be in despair. And, you know, so now by the time I got old enough, that's why I started working at Chick-fil-A. Because I'm like, okay, mom struggles to like buy clothes for us for school and Christmas. Let me take a burden off of her and buy my own stuff.
Yeah.
But I quit. Once they was like, no. So I went up there for the week, recorded a whole bunch of songs, and that's when Knife was like, yo, do you want to be a part of Jamma?
Mm.
And I was like, yes. And, you know, one thing I'll also give him grace, and I mean, I'm grateful for, is even in that moment, he never let me sign no contract, which I was underage at the time as well. But I ain't never signed a contract directly to him of like Jamla. But I think that helped me because it made our relationship not just like a business transaction.
Right.
Which obviously later on the contract came when I signed the Roc Nation and we did the joint venture and stuff like that. But it was more so of I'm just here to help.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Instead of like, all right, this is the contract. This is how much money we're going to give you. This is how much you're going to owe. This is how much. Like, no, I'm just here to invest in you. And then when we get the big bucks, that's what we all going to eat at the table together. You know what I mean?
So that must have been kind of freeing then.
Yeah.
Right? Like you have this partner.
Yeah.
Truly. And not necessarily through a contract, but just through like life.
Yeah, for sure. And just partnership with the whole community, the whole Jamma community. And so that week I recorded my whole project, which ended up being my first project, which was called Myers Park, mm-hmm. which was the school I was going to at the time. And that was like the same week that Kendrick Lamar's album had came out and Knife was on it. But mm-hmm. I remember he played it for me right before it came out. And I was just like, and that was like a first moment of like, I would come around the studio, but they were not playing me songs that like, oh, if like Mac Miller came to the studio, they weren't playing me the song they made or like, you know. So this was like a first time of him like playing me unreleased. And he was like, welcome to the family.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it just history happened after that of like, I just took that and then just ran with it. You know what I mean? And still was in school, still learning. But now I'm fully confident in what was going on. And now I'm building my identity of who I am as an artist.
Mm. What do you see as your identity right now as an artist?
That's a great question. I feel like my identity right now in 2025, at 24 years old, I am mostly the most authentic I've been in a while. And I say that in a sense of early on in my career, I feel like I was trying to fit in, searching. I always been strong in who I was, but I was always in the back of my mind like, okay, I have to fit into a mold of something. Mm-hmm. How do you fit into the mold when the mold is you? You know what I mean? So I feel like my identity is getting back to who I was, getting not back to who I was in the sense of like trying to be stuck in the past, but as you grow up, there's all of these outside opinions, all of these, you know, certain things that, you know, influence who you are. And, you know, I think a lot of us as adults are trying to return back to that inner child inside of us. And who are we at our full authentic place?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's still a journey. I still have much more to get back to being authentic. But I think my identity right now is for those kids who are on that search, or who even the adults that are on that search. All of us are starting to search, get back to that kid. But even my identity is being that kid who was a little bit different and being okay with it. You know, I feel like growing, and I was just having this conversation with one of the homies at one of our homegirls' birthdays, but he was like, growing up, he was hood adjacent, where he was like, he didn't grow up with the most resources. He didn't grow up in the best neighborhoods, but he wasn't a product to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, he was into arts and like skateboarding and like, you know, all these other things. And I've always felt that way. You know what I mean? I feel like as a kid, I always kind of, and there's no right or wrong. So I want to, because I don't want to make it an ego thing of like, I'm different. I see things better than other people. Like, but there was a certain, you're dealt cards when you're born. Mm-hmm. You're dealt cards when the environment you live in. And it's either up to you to accept those things or realize what you want for yourself and try to, you know, accumulate that. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's the message that I'm rooting for right now of, you know, being authentic to who you are no matter what's around you. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of things in my life that are environmental, but it's not who I am to my core, or at least who I think I am called to be.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're called to be someone that is going to try their, like, put everything into something?
Yes. Yes.
And absolutely. Beyond that, have a sort of a sponge of a brain.
Yeah, for sure. Like being open-minded, but also putting my all into who I am as a person. I think, you know, I think your circumstances make you who you are. And I think because of the circumstances of what I've lived through, what I've experienced, I've always sought better for myself. And I feel like those little early moments of like writing at 4 years old, telling my friend, yo, we have to stay like here and, you know, record or like write these songs to go to the studio. Like, I was always seeing better for my circumstances. I was always wanting more out of what the circumstances I was given. Even when I think of like my family and like, you know, generational curses that are put up on my family, I've always not been pulled to those things, you know, because a lot of it is genetic and a lot of it is like a common cycle of things. But I feel like I've always been pulled to like redirect certain things that I might not necessarily agree with.
Yeah.
That I feel like is affecting me. You know what I mean? And I still, you know, deal with, but is this what I want for myself? No. How do I redirect that? You know what I mean? I didn't grow up, my father was present in my life, but I didn't grow up with him in my house. So it's like, there's no right or wrong answer, but it's like, okay, you can either A, be this type of guy, where it's like, in my profession, it's also a big thing of like, oh, you're like the rapper. You're, you know, it's hard for y'all to settle down. Whoop-de-whoop-de-whoop. And it's like, are you, and if that's what you're at peace with, that's fine. But it's like, do you either want to be that, or do you want to be, you know, a father? Do you want to be in a one woman relationship? Do you want to, you know, these are questions now that I ask myself now for like, obviously I'm still 24, yeah, but like.
You're a young guy.
Yeah, yeah. Far from me. But these are things that I'm like prepping myself for when I get to like 30 something years old or 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. Like, it starts with habits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think, you know, my identity right now is just setting myself up. And I think, you know, it kind of ties in with like what by this time, the project that's going to be coming out at this time, like a lot of it is like real college theme. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's not about college, but like, you know, the rollout is like tying in with like university and school. Yeah. But I feel like a lot of people go to school to set themselves up for their life. Mm. You know what I mean? And some people don't, you know, sometimes you just go to college and you just
party.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, I've experienced as well. But now that I'm a little bit older now, I'm like, okay, how do I want to prep myself and set myself up for success?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I feel like that's where I am in my mind now with like my habits, how I'm relaying myself, how I'm handling my love relationships, how am I handling, you know, my relationship with my parents, my relationship with my friends. I'd rather just, you know, set myself up for success right now and then tell and then also be a voice of advocate for people who do look like me or people who don't look like me of like, it's okay, you know, it's okay to follow who you are at the core or and like be content with what's in here and not, you know, be always searching for the outside sources to like validate you.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
I know that was like long winded, but I had it like, I was trying to bring it back to there.
Identity is a search that will happen throughout our entire lives.
Yeah. 100%. And it's never going to stop. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
never going to stop. So whatever I'm saying now might change 10 years from now, but.
And that's okay.
That's where I'm at in my life in this yeah. moment. Yeah.
So I want to also talk to you about, like, where do your songs come from?
Life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my life. They come from my life. They come from my experiences or experiences adjacent to me. Sometimes they come from me already having a clear, precise vision on where I wanted to go. Or B, I might just let my pen flow. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And just see where it takes me. But, you know, I think even more than ever now, I try to write from a very authentic place. So all I can do is broadcast my life or let this be a diary to what I experience or talk about my experience. I can't talk about your experience better than you can. I can't talk about his experience, y'all experiences. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can probably write a song about it, but it's not going to feel as authentic better than you could. You know yeah. what I mean? So I think, you know, a lot of my music now has been, you know, at least these last couple of years has been trying to be authentic to who I am at my core, back to the identity thing. You know what I mean? Yeah, my life, man. And if it's somebody else's story, it might be like, oh, that story moved me. Mm-hmm. Or like, that's somebody that I, like, if I do write about somebody else, because it's not always me, it's like a homegirl I knew who like had a story that just made me feel some way emotionally that I'm like, man, I have to tell her story because I know the emotions that she went through this process. I know that the emotions that she went through in this moment. Or I got a friend who went through this and he's doing this thing. And, you know, these are the emotions that I'm seeing, like I'm internalizing seeing them go through. And how do I, you know, but it's all adjacent to my life, you know?
Right. So it's autobiographical
yeah,
in a way.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
also sort of you're sort of seeing other people and sort of filtering it through the lens of you.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So yeah, that's where my music comes from.
A little bit about that. So I want to talk a little bit about Charlotte too.
704.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's it like to be a part of that scene?
Charlotte is what made me. Charlotte is what gave me my swag, my emphasis, the person I am. So I think me being a part of that community is me paying my forever debt to the home that I'm from. In a way of like, and it's not a debt in a way of, oh man, I gotta pay like the bill collector, you know, my credit card debt or whatever. But it's in the sense of like, I owe everything to Charlotte. And I remember being a child and not having as much resources in Charlotte, not seeing visually what the arts look like in Charlotte. So to me, to be in the Charlotte community now while it's growing, while I feel like it's finally kicking the door down in the industry, in my generation and the one maybe before me, a mixture are going to be the first pillars of what represents Charlotte. Mm-hmm. I'm like just super grateful to be like a part of that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I talk about when they talk about Charlotte's music, I want to be like first in at least one of the names first in conversation. And not just for the grace of my ego or, you know, me, but I want to be able to pay it forward. You know, like when there's another generation, like being to be like, okay, Ruben kicked down the door for me. And then even being able to pull a generation up or like, okay, this kid, he's from Charlotte. Let me pull him up and give him the roast. Even if it's like, you don't even have to be signed to me or whatever. Like, you know, I envision having my own label later on in my life. But, you know, even just being a person that people can call and give them experience of how the industry is. And I do that now. You know what I mean? But I think it's very important because my mom always says this quote, and I think it's from the Bible. The streets don't buy you if the house can't sell you. You know what I mean? And I think it means something like you go out in that world and people are not going to, you can't get people to, you know, buy into you. And when I say buy in, not in the sense of like buying like money wise, yeah. But like, you know,
trust you.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't know where home starts, you don't know what home is or you don't know what your home is. So it's like if the streets can't buy you, the house won't sell you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's like, I feel like I would be doing myself an injustice if I didn't pour back into Charlotte.
And I'm wondering too, I mean, it seems like Charlotte's in a very interesting place right now as far as hip hop goes.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of gone in waves a little bit, but now there's like this really strong presence there that you're a massive a part of.
Yeah.
What's it like to be a part of that wave of people that are making music there?
I think it feels good because more so than ever, it being about me being one of them, I think when I was a kid, I didn't see as many representations. I'm not saying there weren't no rappers in Charlotte, but it wasn't a representation of like, yo, there's kids right now that can say, I saw Ruben Vincent on the BET Hip Hop Awards. I saw Ruben Vincent at Dreamville. I saw Ruben Vincent on Sway's. I didn't see that from a Charlotte rapper up until I was 17 and trying to chase it myself when I saw the baby, you know, doing it. I remember being 5 and 8 and 6 and I had to look at Jay-Z. I had to look at Kanye West. I had to look at, you know, Nas. I had to look at Tupac. You know what I mean? I think me being a pillar, like it's like, even you saying, I'm like, oh snap. Like, oh, I'm like an important name, but it's like, it's dope because then it you get to pay it forward and be a representation for the next generation. And I think, you know, me doing that, it just reminds like, I feel like a lot of people, we run away from responsibility sometimes, including myself at some times in my life, or the fear of responsibility. And I think, you know, responsibility is attached to purpose. Mm. And I feel like the purpose I'm fulfilling, I have to be mindful of my responsibility in being a pillar of Charlotte's hip hop and how I maneuver through that.
Yeah. That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Like, I know, dude.
Yeah. But pressure make diamonds, right? Mm. Is it really pressure when that's what you're designed to do?
You feel that way?
At one point in my life, I used to be like, yeah, it's pressure. You know what I mean? But I'm starting to think like, is it really pressure if that's what you're meant to do? It's scary. It's definitely scary. On the other side of fear is freedom, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, why, like anything, purpose is never going to be easy. Anybody fulfilling a purpose, because there's going to be tests. There's going to be like the universe is going to work against you to see how strong you are and challenge you into, like, nobody's ever born that has a purpose and it's like, all right, I just like skipped to my purpose. It's like, no, on the way to that journey to reach my purpose, there was a pit stops. There was, you know, I might gotta go fill up the tank. My car might break down. You know, I might go realign the wheels. You know what right. I'm saying? Like, all of these things happen on that journey to your purpose. So it's like, those things are very pressure. That's pressure too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I've been just trying to redirect my mind on that of like, you know, yes, it is pressure, but is it really when it comes with the territory almost? You know what I mean? Just like my field and your field, there's going to be pressures. But those pressures are only there to make us better.
I want to talk to you a little bit about this set that we have for the show.
Yes.
It's been really fun talking to you about what you imagine for the Reuben Vincent universe.
Yeah.
And early on, you kind of said, hey, like, I'm really inspired by my bedroom.
Yeah, yeah.
My childhood bedroom. Like, I just like think that like if I were to say this is my set, it would be that. Why is that? What was it about your bedroom that really inspired you to build a set around it?
A lot of songs people hear was recorded in my bedroom.
Yeah.
I have like this tendency, like I do better working alone in my bedroom than I do in like a big studio, except Ninth Studio. Mm-hmm. Like I can get off in there. But I realized that, and I'm not saying I can't go in a bigger studio and make songs, because I still do, but I feel like my most authentic songs, my most real vulnerable songs have came from my bedroom. So I felt like I wanted to bring that to this set because I wanted to be able to be fully ingrained in who I am in a way of like in a funny way. You guys see my clothes off dang near. Like, you know what I mean? Like, to be funny, like it's like, I want to be that exposed in my performance of like how raw, how authentic, how true to Reuben Vincent I am. So when you guys like said, I was like, let's bring my bedroom. So I can just, in my mind, can trick myself into like being that Reuben that's in his room and recording and being super passionate behind that microphone. And that's also the place where I journal a lot. Mm-hmm. I journal in my room. I meditate. A lot of my thoughts that before I think them out or say them to the world is usually sitting on my bed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? From when I was a kid all the way up till now. And even when I think about it as a kid, like a lot of the times when my mother was going through things or when I was going through my personal growth, a lot of my self-realization, which like probably other kids as well, was in my bedroom. You know what I mean? But then that just became a sanctuary for me, so.
Do you feel like your creativity can really flow?
Yeah, 100%. I think I just work better alone sometimes. But I don't want to be like a guy that just like, oh, I don't work with nobody. But it's like, I just feel stronger. Like, you know, it's crazy because there's this like app called Pattern. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, you put your birthday in and like all your extra stuff. And
oh, like, yeah, I know this. Actually, we have a horoscope expert in this room with us too.
Really?
If we want to go there later.
We'll chat.
Yeah.
But in the app Pattern, there's like this one thing that's like, it was like this one thing and I resonated with it. And I try not to like fully like live my life off of like an app or like whatever, or like even a horoscope thing. But like I read, once I put all my stuff in, my information, and it read my chart, and it was like, which I do feel like there's a truth to that, you know. It was like, you do best working as an individual. Your strongest ideas come from when you're alone. Mm. And then once you bring those, once you get strong idea, then you can share it and, you know, build community around it. And I fully, fully believe that to like 100%, because that's how I was as a kid. Like, and it might even be programmed, because when my first ever ideas, that first mixtape Ninth Heard, I did all by myself at my house.
Yeah.
Nobody was around. Those mixtapes I burned when I was in sixth grade passing out were at my house by myself, you know? So I just felt like, you know, that individual, you know, I just take pride in being able to craft something as an individual and stand on it before I, you know, share it out to the world.
One of the things we like to ask folks that come on the program is, you know, how they're shaped by sound. You know, I think we believe that music can affect us as people, right? It can help define us as people. Also can help us define ourselves as a community.
Yeah.
In many other ways. And I'm curious, you know, how do you think that you are shaped by sound?
Sound has shaped my whole life. I'm shaped by sound because sound comes from energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, we're all made from energy. The energy your mother and your father used created you. You know what I mean? And I feel like sound, if not, is one of the most powerful-less things on earth. There's healing sounds. Music can heal. So, you know, sound can disrupt.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Sound can, you know, alarm you. Sound can also calm you down. You know what I'm saying? So I think sound has been very important to me in my life because I don't know if the person you see in front of you is who I am without sound. You know what I mean? I don't know if I am the same Ruben if I didn't listen to the music in my father's car.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I am the same Ruben if I didn't listen to Kanye West and he's talking about how fly he gets and stuff like that. Like, those things shaped me into being the person I am today. I'm also not the same person if I don't utilize the sound of my mother's voice, my father's voice, you know what I'm saying? The sound of reasoning mm-hmm. from, you know, my counsel, even the sound of closing my eyes and hearing the sound of God sometimes, you know what I mean? I think all of those things shaped me. And I think, you know, I've also been big on like healing frequencies lately and like, you know, just like meditating with those. And I think those are like super healing. So, you know, your life is shaped by sound. Your life is shaped by everything you consume. But most importantly, sound is like probably top two, if not two, top five and top one, if not two.
Yeah.
When it comes to, you know, how we are shaped every day, you know, because it reaches into your subconscious and stuff like that. So that's how I'm shaped by sound. Music raised me, man. So, you know what I mean? I ain't Ruben without music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at this point in the conversation, I'd love to go through the set list with you and talk through some of the songs you're going to play for us, which we're really, really excited by. So we'll start with Butterfly Doors.
Butterfly Doors. Butterfly Doors was created in my room, like majority of these songs. It was created in my room at a time I was just getting back home from campus. COVID happened, so we had got sent home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the summertime. And I remember this is a time where I had been recording at Ninth Studio. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy myself some equipment again so I can start recording at my house. So I had bought my mic. And this was one of the first songs I ever did. I didn't write it, but it was just a very braggadocious song. Mm-hmm. Very grand, very like, I'm him, you know, type of song. And I think, you know, at that time, that's like what I was trying to convey to myself and, you know, gain that confidence back. So that's what Butterfly Doors is. And, you know, it's funny because that's one of the first songs I recorded around that time. And I also sent that to Young Guru, who ended up being, you know, one of my other mentors before me and him even got close. But I knew him through Ninth.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, yo, I think he's going to like this. You know what I'm saying? And I ended up sending it to him. And then, you know, the rest is history. But, you know, and then also, too, like at this time, like before I got signed to Rock, I was like a big, big Jay. I was like diving into Jay-Z a lot.
Yeah.
And I loved how Jay just like had them braggadocious like songs that were just swagged out. So I feel like Butterfly Doors was like my version of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Looks Just Like a Dream.
Looks Just Like a Dream. This is a song that I recorded when I went out to L.A. And I started working on my project when I first did sign my deal. I just remember looking at this song in a place of how far dreams can take us. Like my family had American dreams to be to America, coming from a village in Liberia. You know, then that dream turned into, you know, the dream of a family. Then that dream turned into, oh, I have kids now. I dream for them that they get to fulfill their dreams. Now my dream was to be a star, be an artist, be somebody who's living their life fully through music. And that's what you hear in that song, in the verses, is me connecting those dreams. You know, that's why I started off as in the village, the dreams occur, paths defer. You know what I mean? You know, and it just goes deep into the bag of like different family members, maybe my parents, myself, and how our dreams are all simultaneously connected. Yeah.
Into one larger vision.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about Time Flies?
All right. Time Flies. This song came to me at a time where I was starting to date a lot heavy. In my college days, you know, having fun and stuff like that. And, you know, picking up girls and, you know, kicking it with them in the wee night of the hours when I should have been home.
Yeah.
But I'm a little bit, I'm like, oh, I'm grown now, or at the time, you know. So, you know, one of these, this song actually comes from a moment where, and it's so funny, I have a Jeep now. I did not have a Jeep when I wrote this song.
Oh, you manifested that then.
Yeah. Like, I was thinking about getting a Jeep. But I did not have a Jeep when I wrote this song, and I have a Jeep now. But it's funny because the song starts from, like, this moment of, like, this girl, basically, like, we used to hang out late in the night at hours. And not, like, we were doing crazy stuff all the time. But, like, sometimes we just sit in the car and play music and, like, look at the stars and stuff like that. And, you know, when you like somebody and you're in the first stages, like, the honeymoon phase.
Yeah.
At least in that time of my life, we'll be in the car like 11 o'clock and then we'll look up, it's like 4 a.m. And we're like, yo, we sat in the car for this long, listening to music, talking, just doing stuff, being kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what that song resonates with. And, you know, it just, we took the Janet Jackson sample because I used to play a lot of R&B in the cars with girls, like 90s R&B.
Yeah.
And we used that as the, like, the backtracking for that.
Man, you're smooth, huh?
Yeah, a little. Sometimes, you know, I can be a little, you know, suave.
Can you tell us about Point of View?
Yes, Point of View is like that self-realization moment. You know, I feel like you get, you know, every year you're gonna have self-realization about yourself. But I think, you know, at this point in my life, no pun intended, I was starting to look at different point of views and realize that everybody has a different point of view on how their life, you know, goes, how your life looks, or just even in general of, you know, looking past those point of views and just fulfilling what is called for you to do. And I think at that point I was starting to become more grounded in myself and become confident in myself and realize that, like, I've made it to a different threshold in my life. Where, like, now I've reached this plateau of, like, people are acknowledging me for who I am. And, you know, trying to weed out different point of views and then also trust my point of view. You know what I mean? So it's just very, like, a affirmation for myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big Bank.
Ooh, Big Bank. So Big Bank don't take Bubba. Bubba is a word that they say in, like, you know, my stepfather, he's from Sierra Leone. And you know, this is a word that they used to use as a pigeon that means small boy, right? So you know the saying, Big Bank don't take Little Bank. It was just a play on that, but just making it, you know, West African. And, you know, Big Bank to me is a song where I'm asserting myself in a way of, like, I'm here. Like, I'm here and I'm not playing around no more. You know what I mean? I'm not playing around about my culture. I'm not playing around about who I am. Like, I'm standing here and I'm standing firm. And, you know, that's why the song connects both of my cultures. Like, you hear the Southern drums at one point, but then you also hear the African rhythms. You know what I mean? And that's what Big Bank was for me, was a affirmation again as well of, like, I'm not taking nothing smaller than the big levels that I'm supposed to be at. And, you know, just poking my chest out in that way. You know? So, yeah.
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 And fufu.
Yes. So, obviously, fufu is a West African dish.
Yeah.
But if you look at it, it looks kind of like doughy.
Yeah.
So, I was, like, playing on it and taking fufu and, like, attaching it to money and, like, financial freedom. And so, that's why I say, like, I've been outside all summer trying to grind all summer, cut a moolah, I won't make it. I've been with the tribe all summer, can't divide, gotta make it multiply, gotta bring back buku. I put my hand in that fufu, and it's like, yeah, everybody's like, oh, you're talking about food, but it's like, no, I'm talking about money.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about bringing financial freedom and financial literacy back to my homeland, back to my family, back to my village, back to my tribe, and being able to spread it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Man, what a cool idea.
Thank you.
And I'll be honest with you, that's the first Ruben Vincent song that I heard.
Really?
and was absolutely floored by it.
Oh, wow. Thank
you. And it's one of those where it's like, if I need to like turn up a little bit,
yeah,
I put on Fufu.
Hey, that's fire. That's fire.
Can you talk to us about Jump?
Yes. So Jump is a more personal song. You know, I feel like, you know, me being an advocate for young men, I feel like a lot of times we have a hard time vocalizing sometimes when we're going through stuff, because it's like, you're a man, be strong. You know what I mean? Don't, you know, a lot of people, at least, you know, in the culture that I come from, is like, don't cry. Mm. You know what I mean? Be tough. You sound soft when you start, you know, vocalizing how you feel. And I started to realize that's not necessarily healthy. You know, as going through therapy and, you know, going through, you know, my journey in life. And I realized that that was no longer serving me the best and not serving some of my friends the best. You know, I have friends who was coming to me like, yo, I'm suffering emotionally, mentally, and I don't know if I want to be here. And I was like, whoa, you know. So when I was writing the song, I started to feel these emotions, and I felt like, you know, this song was for me to help anybody who is going through something and have a hard time vocalizing it. Because, you know, a lot of times we'll be like, what's wrong? Nothing. You know what I mean?
Right.
And instead of being like, no, this is what's wrong with me. And, you know, a lot of times that leads us to destruction. And, you know, I had a girl come up to me at a show I did in Atlanta last week. And when I did this song, she was like, I cried. She was like, it's funny because it's so like, it's like a little bit like bouncy. But she was like, I cried because her husband passed away and, you know, he, you know, took his own life, but she wished that he would have vocalized what he was going through instead of doing that. So Jump was for me just like, please don't let me jump. That's like an affirmation to myself, but it's like also, please don't let the pain overbear. Don't let it hold you. You can bring some change if you tell him what you're going through. You know, you can bring some change for yourself. You can bring some change for somebody else. You just have to vocalize what you're going through.
Yeah.
And that was the message for that one.
Mm. And Blessings.
Yes. Blessings is a song, is very Afrocentric, has a, you know, lively African beat in it. But that song was done in Atlanta, and that song was created in a sense of vocalizing where I've been in my life, the things that I've seen. And instead of being like, oh, these things affect me. Oh, man, these things, what are we doing? Oh, man, I'm hurt. This is, it's like, no, all of these things were blessings in my life. You know what I'm saying? From struggling, from my struggles to my triumphs to, you know, me still trying to figure it out as a young man. All of these things are blessings. You know what I mean? And being grateful for where you at are, where you're at in your life. That was the message for Blessings for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this is the last one we have on here, but Grand Cherry.
Yes. So Grand Cherry is about my car. It's not really, it is, but it's not, right? Grand Cherry is a metaphor, it's symbolism, which it is my car. I have a Grand Cherokee Jeep.
Yeah.
But it's a more about enjoying the journey, enjoying the ride instead of the destination. And it's funny because I feel like I have to continue to remind myself of that. Instead of getting caught up in where the destination is, because I feel like sometimes I get so attached to the outcome that I don't enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this song was just like a message of that. That's why I say, like, whenever that day comes and they say, I'm going with the wind, stand over me and kiss my cheek, hug my friends to the grave with grace, hope the bonds don't bend. So, like, to the grave with grace is just saying, like, to the end of this journey, I'm going to move with grace. You know, and enjoy my ride. And, you know, my car is not like, you know, I don't have like a Lamborghini or like, you know, a car like a Maybach or, you know, nothing crazy. But I felt confident in calling this Grand Cherry because I was like, yes, this is my car and this is where I'm at in my life.
Yeah.
And I'm going to enjoy this car until the wheels fall off. And then vice versa, when I do get a Rolls Royce or, you know, when I do get a nicer car, I'm going to enjoy that. But right now in my life, I'm at the Grand Cherry level and I'm going to enjoy that, this journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got to get you some of that Jeep Cherokee money, man.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Jeep, call me, man. I promote the new Grand Cherokee if y'all want. I won't get another car if y'all going to advertise and pay your boy. You know what I'm saying? I'll be Grand Cherokee'd up until y'all stop paying me. Yeah. But y'all got to hit my phone first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ruben, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's the pleasure is all ours. And this is our, we've done 13 episodes. We have a 13 episode first season. So I just wanted to kind of give a quick shout out to some of the crew here, if you're okay.
Let's
with
go.
That. This show wouldn't be possible without all of these folks. And I'm going to make sure I spell everybody's names right. So, or say everybody's names right, because I'm terrible at this. But thank you to Brad, Matt, Nick, Jody, Dan, Isaac, Billy, Nathan, Eric, Glenn, Stephanie, Drew, Bob, Trey, Emily, Steve, Shannon, Jen, Brad, Izzy, Bryce, Josh, our marketing team, you know who you are, our CEO, David Crabtree, and of course, Laura Keeler, and of course, our sponsors at NCDNCR and Come Here and See. We truly couldn't have done it without them. And obviously to viewers like you, thank you for 13 episodes of season one.
Thank y'all. Y'all the greatest. Let's go. Shout out to everybody involved. And I appreciate y'all for having me. And if you're watching from home, thank you for watching.
Thanks for joining us on the Shaped by Sound podcast. If you'd like to hear some of the songs we discussed today, you can find them on our website, pbsnc.org/shapedbysound, or find us on the PBS North Carolina YouTube page. Thanks for listening.